Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Technology has changed our lives. Smartphones, computers, and TVs are products many of us use every hour we're awake. Even our cars and farm equipment are computerized. But what also has changed is our ability to fix these products when they are broken or aren't operating properly. There are advocates who say that's because manufacturers don't make repair information or parts available to consumers. On today's Smart Talk, we discuss right to repair legislation. Joining us in the studio today, Emma Horst Martz is with PennPerg. She's an associate with PennPerg, a consumer advocacy group. Ms. Horst Martz, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us, Tim Mentzer, owner of Mentzer Repairs in Ephrata. Mr. Mentzer, it's good to see you.
Thank you very much.
And on the telephone, Gay Gordon Byrne, executive director of the Repair Association. Ms. Gordon Byrne, thank you for being with us today.
Hey, great to be here.
And Olivia Webb is outreach coordinator with iFixit. Olivia Webb, welcome to Smart Talk.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
If you have a question or a comment, I don't know if we can fix anything on the air for you, but we can maybe direct you in the right place. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Olivia Webb, I'm going to start with you. You're the outreach coordinator with iFixit. First of all, tell me what iFixit is. Explain iFixit, if you would.
Yeah, so iFixit is, we call ourselves the free online repair manual, and our mission is pretty much to teach everyone in the world to fix something. And we believe that everyone has the ability to fix something, but not everyone knows how to fix everything. So we just like to pool everybody's resources and become like a central place where you can go to fix whatever you need, whether that's a cell phone, a tablet, a skateboard, a TV. We're just trying to gather all the information we can about how to fix everything. We're a global company. We have online stores here in the U.S., in Europe, Canada, and Australia, and over 50,000 free repair guides on our site. Many of those are written by our technical engineers in-house, and most of them are actually written by community members and students all over the world who contribute guides to our site.
You keep track of the contacts that you get throughout the world. What products are Pennsylvanians trying to fix most often?
You know, I don't have data specifically on Pennsylvania right now. I'm happy to get it for you. But across the board, the most common repairs we're seeing are screens and battery repairs across devices. So tablet, laptop, and cell phone screens and battery repairs.
And Scott, if I can just jump in here, this is Emma. Mm-hmm. That's consistent with what Pennsylvanians are fixing as well. At PennPerg last year, we partnered with iFixit to gather all of that data from what Pennsylvanians specifically are searching on their site. And we found that screens and battery repair are the most common guides that Pennsylvanians are searching on iFixit.
Now, that would seem to be an easy fix. Now,
you would think.
Tim Mentzer?
Sometimes.
Okay, well, let's talk about
flip
that. I mean, that would seem to be, okay, it's a screen. I mean, I have gotten screens, probably everyone has gotten a screen fixed, but that would seem to be an easy fix, but apparently it's not, Tim.
No, quite the opposite. It depends. If it's an Apple iPhone, you need a special screwdriver just to get the two bottom screws out. It depends. Every manufacturer is different, so you have different screws. The backs are glued on with glass. There's all types of setbacks to mess you up when you're trying to fix the phone.
Now, why do you think that is?
For profits, because people just simply go buy another phone. Mm-hmm. If their device stops working, they cannot live without it.
We're going to talk more about that in just a moment. But, Emma, that does bring us to right to repair legislation, which we're here to discuss today. Mm-hmm. As a consumer advocacy group, you're behind the push here in Pennsylvania for right to repair. What is the legislation? What is right to repair?
So the right to repair movement is pretty simple. It asks that manufacturers provide three things to consumers and independent repairers who want to fix their stuff. The first is the information that they need to do those repairs. So that could be a manual to see how the device is put together. It could be other schematics information. The second piece is those specialized tools that Tim mentioned, you know, special screwdrivers that Apple has designed to prevent people from opening the device, any other tools that you would need to start that repair process. And then the third thing is those replacement parts themselves. So that could be the screen, the battery, you know, anything else that you would need to actually perform and complete the repair.
All right. Now, you are doing this in Pennsylvania, and I'm going to talk to the Repair Association. Gay Gordon Byrne in just a moment has done in other states as well. But why do this on a statewide level? I mean, these are products that are used throughout the country and throughout the world. Why not go to Congress on a federal level and try to get right to repair legislation done?
Well, this is a pretty common legislative strategy that we'll use, especially on consumer issues. You know, the idea is that if you start passing laws in a handful of states, the companies will recognize that it's worth their while to change their practices across the whole country and their entire platform. And we can actually see this in history, back with the automobile industry. In the early 2000s, when cars were becoming more electronic and running off of computer systems, the Attorney General of Massachusetts actually sued to have automobile manufacturers provide the same technical information to independent customers and repair shops as they do to their dealerships, so that other people can perform repairs on cars. At the same time that was happening, there was a ballot initiative run for the public in Massachusetts, and folks there voted overwhelmingly in support of this idea of right to repair. And then the result of that process was that the automobile industry had an agreement across all of their states and their entire platform to provide those things to independent repairers and customers. So that's why you can take your car to the mechanic down the street to get it fixed, and you're not forced to go to the manufacturer that can often charge higher prices.
So let me bring Gay Gordon Byrne, Executive Director of the Repair Association, into our conversation. Ms. Gordon Byrne, you have worked on right to repair legislation kind of on a state-by-state basis. I'll ask the same question of you. Why do it on a state level rather than just going to Washington and saying, you know, this is something that we need nationally?
It's a great question, and the answer is really pretty simple, is that the states have the power to of contracts. And the enforcement mechanism that the auto industry sought was very appropriate for states. And they did it in states because it worked, and we just copied it. But in reality, we have Congress people that are asking us now, what do we do federally? And we give them some ideas about what to do. But really, the mechanical part, the access to the parts and tools and diagnostics, is something that states can command, much like they do with lemon laws. So it fits the role of the state. And the federal government has some things they can do. They can loosen up on copyright law. They could start enforcing some of their some of the monopoly problems that are going on. But the real value is in the state, and it seems to work really well.
Okay, now here's the cynical side of me coming out and asking this question. I mean, we're talking about, and we'll find out a little bit later in the program, that we're talking about some of the biggest companies, some of the biggest manufacturers in the world. Apple has already been mentioned. John Deere is another. And there are some others that we'll talk about as well. Those companies would seem to have just a whole lot of money and a lot of political clout. Again, and I'll frame this by saying this is the cynical side of me. Could that have anything to do with why the Congress is not jumping on board with this?
I think you're very cynically correct.
Yeah.
the auto industry actually did try to get a law done in Congress, because it is everybody's first reaction, is that we'll just go get this done. And they wasted about, well, by their own words, they said they wasted about 10 years trying to do it through Congress, because the lobbies are so strong. And there is a whole lot more money running around on K Street than there is in Harrisburg. So it's actually proven that the state legislators, by and large, are not nearly as influenced by big money as they are by their constituents. So if there are several hundred people in a district that say, I want my right to repair, that legislator is almost certainly going to vote for it. And we've seen that in the cases where we have a lot of, where we've done a lot of advocacy and a lot of grassroots organizing, where, for example, in New York State, we've got over 30,000 individuals that have written their legislators. And if that bill in New York is to get to the floor, we have a pretty good inkling that it will pass, just like the auto right to repair passed in Massachusetts. Nobody wanted to tell somebody they didn't want to, they shouldn't be allowed to fix their car, and I don't think any legislator is going to want to stand up in front of their constituents and say, I don't think you should fix your cell phone.
Yeah. I mean, it would seem to be a no-brainer that would cross party lines and everything else, because so many people are impacted by what we're talking about, having all these products that are so popular, and let's face it, sometimes they don't operate properly, and they break down or break a screen or something like that. I want to take a phone call here from Susan in Lancaster. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. I love this program.
Thank you.
I wanted to call with a comment. I grew up with a dad that fixed everything. He was a mechanical engineer, but he fixed everything at home. And I'm retired with my husband now in Lancaster, and we've had things break down in the past, but every single time we had to call somebody, it's like $90 just to come out. So I thought to myself, nah, this is malarkey, let's say. I'm going to fix it. I use YouTube, and I can find basically anything on YouTube to tell me how to fix something. And I have fixed, I've replaced everything in my dishwasher. The last thing I fixed was the door on my microwave. The latch broke, and it's all sealed up, and I found out how to get in there, buy the part from Amazon as per the serial number, bring it in, fix the door, the microwave works great. I have an ice maker waiting in the garage for me to put into my Sears Elite door ice maker, and I also found a YouTube video to show. I showed my husband, because he was all ready to take his Altima to the dealer, and his side view mirror was all wacky and off. He looked at the YouTube video that I found, and he fixed it.
Yeah.
And I think in the small repair, my KitchenAid mixer is next on my list, because I can find a manual online, and I can find a part and directions on YouTube. So I just wanted to say that, because I love learning and fixing the things in my house.
Well, Susan, so I have a couple things to say to you. First of all, I see you're from Lancaster.
Yeah, we moved here in 2011.
Okay, are you willing to travel to other people's houses to fix some of these things that you've been talking about? That's one thing I'm wondering about.
Or do some training.
No, not yet.
Not yet, okay. Well, the other thing is, I was going to say, you need to buy better products. You got a lot breaking down there.
I hear what you're saying, but I find that everything today is made with, what's that term where
they only have a certain shelf life, I think is what you're saying. Yeah. Well, Susan,
that's all I wanted to share. Thanks
right.
for the show. I'm going to listen to you now
okay.
on the radio.
Thank you very much for your call. But Olivia Webb, you know, Susan is right about finding some of these repairs on YouTube. But what she described is much what you do at iFixit. But I think the satisfaction that she gets out of fixing her own products is pretty much what you're looking for with the people that that come to you, correct?
Exactly. That's the exact call we would like to our company to let customers know what we're doing. So, great job, Susan.
All right. Thank you very much. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. You can see some of the shows that we're working on, including Maryland is suing Pennsylvania over Pennsylvania not meeting its goals for the Chesapeake Bay cleanup, and the future of robotics kind of fits in with what we're talking about today, a lot of technology. We invite you to share your questions in advance by sending us a voice memo or leaving voicemail. See what's coming up at witf.org/smarttalk. Today we're talking about right to repair legislation. Our guest guest, Emma Horst Martz, is a Penn Perg associate. Tim Mentzer, owner of Mentzer Repairs in Ephrata. Gay Gordon Byrne, executive director of the Repair Association. And Olivia Webb, outreach coordinator for iFixit. If you have a question or a comment, maybe an experience to tell our listeners about, like Susan, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I guess what we have to establish is the context of this, in that there are, in fact, and I think these figures were provided by PennPerg, that it's like 6 in 10 of the most popular manufacturers do not provide access to spare parts or technical service information. Tim, is that your experience?
Yes, absolutely. Apple would be one of the major ones if you need any parts or tools. Apple doesn't, well, they do sell parts directly now, but that only happened in the past few months. But the price of the parts they sell is about five times what you'd pay in a normal market. But yeah, Apple would be the worst. Tesla's another one where you see with people where they can't fix their own cars because it's all electronic and you need to go to the manufacturer. And computer companies, too. I mean, other than Dell and HP, a lot of the other ones won't release part numbers or that type of thing. So you pretty much got to go on YouTube and figure it out yourself.
Mm-hmm. So, Emma, why do you think, I mean, Tim talked about this a little bit, why is it that there are fewer and fewer manufacturers and companies that are providing this information?
Because they have cornered the market on repair services. A huge percentage of these companies' profit comes directly from charging their customers to do the repair because they know that they can't necessarily go somewhere else. Or if they go to a third-party repairer like Tim, sometimes the company will design a product so that if you put a third-party screen or a new part on it, it can actually brick the device.
Brick the device. What's that, Tim?
That would be like the phone would just stop working. So if you put a non-Apple genuine screen on your phone, it could actually cause the backlight to blow out or that type of thing because they have chips inside of them. Same for the home button on the iPhone 7 and up. If you rip that, you used to be able to replace it with a $5 part, but now it has a chip inside of it. So if you rip it, you can only go to the Apple store to replace it. Otherwise,
okay, but is that anything new? I mean, I think, okay, now I'm going to go back a little bit. And it's just one example, thinking about my teenage years working in a gas station, that there were transmission fluid that if you Ford had one, General Motors had another. I mean, isn't that the same thing?
Well, so repairs have changed in the past 10 years. I've been fixing phones since the iPhone 3G and 3GS. Apple used regular screws on all of their older devices, and we didn't have a lot of these type of problems. Actually, none of the problems. You could change out parts, no problem.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Emma, getting back to what we were talking about before, you talked about maximizing profit. Susan, our caller, said that she thinks that some of these products have shelf life that, because a lot of them have warranties. But I've heard people say that, the phone is just meant to or manufactured long enough to meet that warranty, or the same thing with a car, that then it starts falling apart. Now, I have to say, that sounds like a conspiracy theory.
It might sound a little wacko, but it's what we're seeing happening more and more these days, especially in the smaller devices that we all use, like your cell phone or your computer. You know, Apple is one of the more notorious companies to do this, and we've seen over the years that they are designing products and withholding, future advancements for the next design. And then when your product dies or something breaks and they claim they can't fix it for you, then they just encourage you to upgrade to the next newest model so they can make a profit off of you.
Gay Gordon Byrne from the Repair Association, do you subscribe to that theory?
Oh, planned obsolescence is very real. But it's just so easy to create that situation when you control all of the things that you need to repair something. You can buy a product technically that's maybe got hundreds of components and they're all lousy quality. If you can fix those components, you can keep that thing going for decades. So if you can't repair stuff, you literally are always going to be buying and rebuying and rebuying at the schedule of the manufacturer, because electronics can be very, very durable, but individual components fail. And you've got to be able to fix them, just like a battery. I mean, batteries have a certain life. And if you can't replace the battery in your flashlight, it's not different. Just because it's a different shape of battery that, or, you know, chemistry of battery that's going into a laptop or a cell phone. So why you would want to put a battery, seal a battery into a product where you know that the life of that product is going to be limited by the battery is just nuts. But that's a design problem. That's really not a legislative problem. It's going to be a while before consumer organizations and legislators and regulators get their arms around this sealed battery problem. But I'd like to try to bring the discussion back to what Susan said. The reason she can fix those things is that they're all fundamentally mechanical. As soon as you put a chip in something, that's not something you can just go make in your backyard. You can't just find an alternate provider, and particularly can't find one if the manufacturer won't sell their authentic parts. So the real key to right to repair is that digital chip that's installed and stuff, and that's what's breaking the business of repair. It's what's killing it. And if you think about the fact it's not just cell phones, and the data for cell phones alone is incredible, but the average household in the U.S. already has something like 30 digitally electronic gadgets and things in their home, everything from a garage door opener to their heating systems, their air conditioning, their major appliances, their minor appliances. And as soon as there's a chip there, the manufacturer has said, I'm not helping. And it's probably 90% of the time now with the more modern products, the newer the products, the less help people are getting.
See, and this is something I was going to bring up, because there are certain products that have changed in price over the years. Cell phones, for example. Remember when everyone started getting a cell phone that they were free as part of the deal? Yeah, free.
Absolutely.
But still, they... Right, exactly. But still, sign up for 2 years and we'll give you a phone free. Nowadays, because everyone sees them as must have, they will pay the price for the phone. But then I look at TVs. TVs have come down in price. HD TVs have come down in price so much that... And let's face it, they've changed too. I mean, 4K we have today. 3D didn't exactly take off, that kind of thing. But still, they change. The technology changes all the time. That I'm sure there are consumers, a lot of them, who will say, you know what, I'm just going to get a new TV rather than trying to get this one repaired. Right?
Oh yeah, we tell people all the time.
The manufacturer sets the price tag of repair. They are guaranteed to make it very expensive for you to fix it, relative to the price of a new one, because that's good for them. It's lousy for consumers. I mean, if you could, I think there was a Wall Street Journal article back in maybe 2014 where a reporter took the trouble to go to a repair guy and they figured out how to fix the thing for a 14-cent capacitor. Now, if it was easy to do, and it actually is, and people had that information, they might choose to hire somebody to come in for $50 and fix their TV rather than go out and buy a new one. It's the price of repair that basically determines whether or not you're going to buy a new one.
But let me just say that is a factor. But Tim, I'm sure you have people too that just, I'm using my analogy with TVs, that someone will want the iPhone 12 or 13 when it comes out, saying, well, I want the newest version of this rather than getting it fixed.
Oh, yeah, there's people that just, they like changing it every 6 months or less than that. But it's more of a consumer-driven thing. Really, people spend over $1,000 on a handset when you can fix your phone a lot of times for maybe $60 to $100. But some of the phones, the screen alone is $100, $200, $300. So sometimes it is smart to buy a new phone, but usually it's better to fix your phone.
Let's take a few phone calls and go to some emails. Nick calls from Lancaster, says, it's pretty easy to get parts online right now. How much is the legislation going to cost? Do they think requiring manufacturers to make parts more available will make them expensive to obtain? Have you looked at that?
So it won't actually change the cost for the manufacturers. They have everything that they need to provide you. And built into the legislative language for this bill is the requirement that the parts and specialized tools and information is sold to consumers and independent repairers at a reasonable price. And oftentimes that means generally the same cost that the manufacturer has.
Well, see, that was just it. Who decides what's reasonable?
You know, we're going to see how that plays out, and Gay may be able to speak more to how that's been shown in other states.
Yeah, Gay, how about that? I mean, I'm sure the manufacturer is going to say, okay, just like pharmaceuticals with R&D, that here's what it cost us, and this is why you should pay this price for this part.
The language in the bill is paragraphs long, and it basically sets forth a whole way that you go about determining fair and reasonable. Ultimately, I think in Pennsylvania, enforcement is going to be with the Attorney General. So you would say, I don't think that price is reasonable. You'd make a complaint to the Attorney General. The Attorney General would basically weigh all of the criteria and say it is or it isn't. Mm. So it won't be. It's a known process. That kind of language is in lots of legislation. So they will be able to get a fair price. But, for example, when my microwave touchpad stopped working, I called GE for a replacement part. The whole thing had cost $600, and GE wanted to sell me the touchpad for $600. So I don't think that would meet the test of fair and reasonable.
Mm, got it. Tim, you wanted to say something?
I'd like to add something about the parts market, too, in general. The problem is the varying quality. You can get a screen off of eBay from China for $20, but if you want a real Apple one, maybe for $70 or $80, where the quality is significantly different, you really want to take your time picking parts. And the thing is, we need some regulation because we have tons of customers buying the wrong part, or they just think they're getting the right thing. But if the manufacturers maybe would have some type of directive to help people fix their own devices, it really might make some change.
Okay, how am I, as a consumer, supposed to know the difference in quality?
Well, you don't, and the problem is we see people go for the cheapest screen possible
right,
on eBay,
right.
And then they mess up their phone, or it just doesn't work, and then they get frustrated, and they don't fix, and they go buy another one.
But that would seem to be that a lot of people, if we look at people's behavior, that, you know, let's face it, a lot of people would go for the cheapest screen, but for those who think, okay, it costs $70, it's going to be better quality, but that's not always the case, right?
No, there's usually a good mid-range. So I guess what I mean is the parts market is just all over the place in terms of buying. Like if you go to an AutoZone store now and buy a part for your car, it's usually going to be at least half decent quality. That's what I'm trying to say.
All right, let's go with Brett in Ephrata. Brett, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah, I was calling in. You got me with about Tesla. Those coal-powered cars have their own body shops, and the body shop has to sign up and be certified by Tesla, but then the minimum rate in this area for the shop nearest here is $129 an hour as opposed to $52 an hour at any other body shop. And and the shop is not allowed to take cash and work on a customer's older Tesla car, even one out of warranty. If they're caught doing that, they lose their certification. That's one of the places you're talking about repairing yourself. That you have a Tesla, you just can't take it to your local body shop to have even a fender pounded out.
Well,
you have to.
Well, Brett, I understand that you're a damage appraiser. I'm wondering though, is Tesla a good example though? Because that's a high end car. I mean, let's face it, you buy a Tesla, that cost a lot of money to purchase a Tesla to begin with. I mean, I think about some other even more common cars like a Corvette that cost a little bit more than a little bit to have something on the body repaired as opposed to something less expensive, less high end. So, I mean, is that unusual that a high-end vehicle like that would have those kind of restrictions?
BMW and Mercedes both are not allowing any aftermarket, used, or reconditioned part on any car that they repair in their body shops, even ones that are out of warranty. So if you're, I can see it sort of under warranty to have your car repaired, but and a lot of the dealers or manufacturers are trying to get into that, where to keep your warranty up, you have to go to their shop, their brand new parts, and all that. Now, I can see that with the new car, but they're also doing that on older cars that are out of warranty. And I've had a couple people have to take their cars. They wanted to go to the BMW shop, but because all new parts were totaled with the car, and they went to, they had to go to another body shop.
Hmm. Hey, well, thank you very much for your call and the examples. I mean, can we make comparisons with other products? Olivia Webb with iFixit, I mean, you're dealing with so many products out there. Are there other comparisons with, I mean, we use Tesla and we use some of the other high-end vehicles out there. Are there other products that follow that same line of thinking?
Of course, yeah. We even see this with Apple, for example. Tim mentioned earlier that, you know, some repair shops can, independent repair shops can purchase original Apple parts, but that is very rare. You have to join a certain program, you have to sign an NDA, and there are very strict rules about who can get original Apple parts. And so sometimes the repair has to be done by Apple because they're the only ones who have access to the parts, and then it will cost a lot more money or, you know, a lot more labor costs because they are controlling those parts, and so they'll be able to drive the cost of the repair up to something it doesn't need to be because they're the only ones with access.
They have a new one that they're controlling. It's a charge chip in one of the newer MacBooks. Lewis Rossman from, I believe, Massachusetts, who's in the Right to Repair, he talks about it a lot. But the charge chip you used to be able to replace on a MacBook when it stops charging, well, now Apple chose a chip that only they make in their factory, and they only sell it to their manufacturers that make the laptops. So there's literally no way to get the replacement part to fix it. So anyhow, they'll try anything.
That sounds like a monopoly.
Yes.
Mm.
Exactly.
It also gets into locks and passwords. I'll give you an example of a refrigerator where a digital thermostat broke. The part was ordered, it was installed, and by the homeowner. And the part literally said enter password, and the homeowner said, called GE and said, where's the password? And GE said, you can't have it. You have to call a GE authorized repair tech to come out for that $100 service fee and insert the password. These locks are coming into everything. They're going into light bulbs. They're going to air filters. They're going into coffee pots. They're going into the craziest stuff you've ever heard of, and the whole point of it is to monopolize repair and make people buy new.
Emma, what were you going to say?
I'm glad Gay brought that up because this is the problem we're seeing in the farming community here in Pennsylvania. The biggest tractor manufacturers, like John Deere, for example, have started installing digital locks on the tractor. You know, it's not like the old days where you could just get out your wrench and your toolbox and fix your tractor
Which
and get back to work.
Would, yeah.
Exactly. Most people were doing that themselves. But now the tractor is controlled by computer software, and you have to have that code, password, if you will, to get into the system to repair anything from the steering wheel is stuck to the sprinkler on this side to the wheel isn't turning properly on the other side. And this is really inhibiting farmers from being able to stay on schedule with their harvest and any other, you know, chores they need to do on the farm. And it costs them a lot of money to call in the manufacturer to provide that password and do the repair for them.
As if farmers don't have enough problems that they're dealing
exactly.
with.
Exactly.
You know? You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. On tomorrow's program, Governor Tom Wolf is making his annual budget address today. Tomorrow's program will be joined by Dr. G. Terry Madonna, Franklin Marshall College political analyst and pollster, to analyze what the governor is proposing. A lot of other things going on that we can talk with Dr. Madonna about as well, including the president's State of the Union address tonight and the problems with the Iowa caucuses yesterday. We can also address that as well. You can leave a voicemail or voice memo question for one of our upcoming programs. More information is at WITF.org/smarttalk. Today's program, we're talking about right to repair legislation. Our guest, Olivia Webb, outreach coordinator with iFixit, Gay Gordon Byrne, executive director of the Repair Association, Tim Mentzer, owner of Mentzer Repairs in Ephrata, and Emma Horst-Martz, Penn Perg, Rosenberg Associates. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Bill in Lancaster. Bill, you're on the air.
Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Bill.
And your people over there. I want to clarify something that the woman said before and then make a point, ask a question. She couldn't come up with the word planned obsolescence, which was started in the 20s, I believe, by General Motors so that parts would fail before the car wears out, and Ford, Henry Ford, quickly picked up on that. Now, my question comment is that I've had computers over the years, and I have a cell phone, which my wife is now using, and it was operating on a couple of apps that I had had in there for a couple of years, no problem. Then all of a sudden, this year, it stopped operating. And when I asked the provider why, they said, oh, your cell phone's too old. You have to buy a new cell phone.
Yep.
Now, I happen to get one from my son, and sure enough, the apps now work. So this I don't understand. I understand that they don't want to support things like the older versions of Windows XP. However, there's no reason in hell why that computer shouldn't work well with the backward compatible programs that come out. And there is a risk, because they're not supporting it, that you could get a virus or something, but that's at your own risk. There's no reason why it couldn't continue to operate the programs, except that they want to sell you new ones.
Hmm. Hey, Bill, thank you very much for your call. Tim, what about that?
Yeah, I have to say it's definitely not very fair. Apple does that with their phones. Once they get to a certain age, they don't update to the latest software. So then if you try and update your apps, your Facebook doesn't work, your Instagram doesn't work. So it becomes a paperweight. Is we'll have phones on older, like an iPhone 4. I'll sell it at my shop for $40 for on Wi-Fi. But all it really does is maybe music on YouTube at the most, because Apple makes it not update. And they do the same thing with their laptops, too. Now, Microsoft, with Windows 10, that runs on almost every computer, probably 90, 95%, even including a lot of the older ones, you know, in the past 10 years or so.
What about GPSs? How often should I get a GPS looked at? I mean, I drive a 10-year-old vehicle. Someone said, oh, your GPS is way outdated.
Yeah, yours probably does need updated. You can get a Maps disk once a year, but then the problem is you have to pay for that. Smartest solution nowadays is if you have a smartphone with Google Maps.
That's what I've been doing.
That's
yeah.
the best way to do it, because
yeah.
otherwise you get hosed by the companies the same way to yeah. buy the updates.
Email, Julia asks, are there options available for assistance for those that may have disabilities, like blindness, physical handicaps, but want to be able to repair their own items? Let me turn to Olivia. What about that, Olivia, with iFixit?
So that's actually, you know, kind of the key here with Right to Repair, is that manufacturers are giving you one choice for repair, and that is their authorized repair shops, their like the Genius Bar, their prices, their parts. And we recognize that not everybody can fix their own devices, and that sometimes it is really complicated, and the manufacturers are making it more and more difficult to repair your own things. But the point of Right to Repair is that you get to choose who repairs your thing. So you can choose whoever you want to repair your phone. You can choose the repair shop you want to take it to, or your KitchenAid, or your car, instead of being forced to take it to the manufacturer and pay their prices. So that person would not have to do it themselves, but they also would not have to take it to the Genius Bar and pay an obscene amount of money for a small repair.
Another listener question. I found that something as small as my new cell phone that looks like the old one, but is made by a different company, has to have a new charger cord made by the same company, even though the old one fits just fine. A warning note comes on to say that the phone might be damaged, catch fire if I use the old cord. Silly, no? That's a question.
Tim? Yeah, that's a ridiculous answer if it's a USB-C charger. But Apple especially, they have a chip that they have in their charging cables now. It's an Apple-certified cable, so that way people can't make their own third-party clones of the cables. Anyhow, it's just another way to make profit, unfortunately.
Yeah, this is a problem we're seeing with all sorts of repairs, along with charging cords and other things you would plug into your device. Like I was saying before, you know, we definitely encourage third-party repair and really value those independent businesses like Tim Runs and Efferta. The problem and what makes it really difficult for them is that when they do a repair and provide a different kind of screen or, you know, fix that woman's charging port, then a company like Apple can sense that there's a third-party repair there and will send you those warning messages, which shouldn't actually hurt your device, but it scares people into bringing their devices to the manufacturer.
Yeah, who wants to start a fire in their house, yeah.
Exactly. So that just funnels the profit back into the manufacturer rather than supporting these small businesses that are trying to help their customers.
Tim, just an observation, but there are fewer and fewer businesses like yours around. I mean, you think about it that TV repairs, for example, every town used to have one, two, three, maybe more TV repair shops. Now, of course, the technology was much different with tubes and everything else, but it seems as though there are fewer and fewer repair businesses like yours. Is that because these manufacturers have got consumers, they've held that gun to their heads, or they've said that you'd be much better off if you came to us rather than going to a Tim Mentzer?
It's definitely a pretty cutthroat business. I've seen more than a few repair shops go out of business in the area, but where I'm from in Effort in Lancaster, we have, I'd say there's at least three other smartphone repair shops in the area, but not many of them do game systems. But there's a high failure rate because you can't find service manuals, so you have you have to worry about breaking things if you don't know how something's going to come apart. Where do you get parts from? So yeah, it's very, very difficult, and because of the manufacturers, it's hard to start a business doing that in the first place. It took me a long time.
Mm. Let's go to Alex in Lancaster. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
Thank you.
So I find it very frustrating as a technologically competent consumer. You know, I have a digital multimeter. I have some awareness of what goes on with some of these items, but time and time again, you try to press for like a pinout. You know, what voltage should I get at this particular point on a board? And no one will ever give that to you anymore. And I find that it's just creating, just because of corporate greed, we're creating so much hazardous waste that typically doesn't act. You know, they always say, oh, there's an electronics drop off here, but nobody does it. They always hide it in their trash.
You don't see where it gets in the end, too.
Yeah.
We're either burning that in our incinerator near my house, or we're putting it in a landfill to figure out what's going to happen to it in 50 years or 100 years. And rather than looking at it and thinking, well, maybe we could repair these things. And everyone's just used to throwing everything out when it fails, but it's typically one or two small components that's causing this problem.
Hey, Alex, thank you very much for your call. And Gordon Byrne, I've gotten several listeners that have made similar comments that they're concerned about the environmental impact of our throw-it-away society, that rather than trying to repair, that we buy new parts and we throw the old product away. And as Alex suggested, maybe a landfill, maybe it gets burned in an incinerator. They're concerned about the environment.
We have enormous support for Right to Repair from everybody from solid waste managers to for-profit and non-profit recycling companies to municipal solid waste management. It's a huge problem. These things don't live well in landfills. They do leach hazardous materials. You can't burn them. You can't crush them. The parts are very hard to pull apart and to separate the materials so that they can be efficiently used as raw materials. So the best use of a used product is to keep it in use as opposed to throwing it away, which also begs the question of who makes money on the recycling. There's very little value in the recycled materials themselves. Manufacturers say we're going to use recycled content, but then they really can't even get it. It's an enormously wasteful process everywhere from the manufacturing side, where I think I've seen some UN stats that it's something like 70 to 80% of all of the carbon costs, if you count in carbon, are associated with manufacturing and not with use. So the longer you can keep your precious electronics in use, the better it is for the environment. Not everybody wants to. But I kind of disagree with the premise that everybody wants the most shiny, wonderful thing. I think people kind of like to keep their stuff. I think they like to keep the stuff they're familiar with, that they know how to operate. And maybe there's some fun stuff that's really cool and that people want to have. But if you're looking at 30 gadgets in your house, they're not all cool. Mm. You know, people want to keep them.
But yeah, we do know, though, that there is a segment of society who does want the newest, the brightest, and I don't know, almost feels like peer pressure sometimes. With you got to have this to be amongst the cool kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's very costly. I mean, the $1,000 phones, you can't. I mean, who can afford that on a regular basis? There's a huge segment of the population can't even begin to afford one phone.
Oh yeah.
So I think there's a big digital divide issue here as well. The longer you can keep things repaired, the more valuable they are, and you can cascade those products down through a series of users, whether or not it's your children or your neighbor or your, you know, donated to a school. If you can't fix it, that stuff can't go anywhere, and it becomes, you know, a lost opportunity for a disadvantaged child, say.
You know, I assume it still happens today, but I've donated old cell phones to, like, Pennsylvania Coalition Against Domestic Violence, that a lot of people that can't afford some of the newer ones and need them for safety reasons. Emma, so, you know, one of the things that PennPerg has been advising people is for those that don't want to buy or don't need to buy the newest, the shiniest, the biggest, the latest, that you've encouraged people to buy refurbished products. Why?
Yeah, so the refurbished market is a really great way to reduce this electronic waste that we're talking about. Just for some local perspective, here in Pennsylvania, we throw away 15,000 phones every single day. If you can imagine how that adds up, that is literally tons of hazardous waste going into our environment. And when the phone costs $1,000, we can't sustain that sort of, you know, product use. So we definitely encourage folks to do their research and maybe ask somebody like a local repair person like Tim, who knows what they're talking about. But we encourage folks to use refurbished products, and that continues to keep those products on the market rather than throwing them away.
You know, there's a psychological part of this where we've been conditioned. We hear refurbished and we think used. Okay, it has been used, but we think not as good.
Yeah, I think that's a mixed conception. I can say personally that most of the electronic equipment that I have gotten over the years has been refurbished, and I haven't had any problems with it. Again, you should do your homework and look into the product that you're buying, but these can be really good options in the long run.
We only have about 2 minutes left. I want to thank all four of you for being with us today. So getting back to right to repair legislation, Emma, where does it stand right here in Pennsylvania, and what are some of the challenges with it? What are some of the cons to it?
Yeah. Well, Representative Austin Davis from Allegheny County here in Pennsylvania is soon going to introduce the Digital Fair Repair Act in the House here in PA. The legislation is being drafted as we speak, and we're excited to see it come to fruition. I think some of the challenges that we'll see are arguments from industry, from the manufacturers, saying that, you know, these repaired products aren't safe, or it opens them up to losing proprietary information, none of which are real issues that we've seen in the auto manufacturing industry when they passed right to repair.
So Gay Gordon Byrne, you have kind of a national perspective on this. What have other states done? I mean, has this passed in other states?
It's getting very close. We've had a number of states pass through committee. We've had votes that we have had votes that should have been taken, and we ran out the calendar. So, no, not yet, but it definitely soon. And, you know, Pennsylvania is one of about, right now, I think we have 16 bills on the table. There will be 17. We'll probably have maybe 10 active bills, or 20, rather, this session. And just so you know, as you mentioned at the beginning, the the stock value of these corporations that are in opposition is just overwhelmingly large, and our only ability to counter that is grassroots. So if people are so inclined, they really should be calling their legislator and saying, I want this bill. I want my right to repair. Because if they say it, they'll get it.
I want to thank all four of our guests for being with us today. Emma Horst-March from Penberg, Tim Mentzer, owner of Mentzer Repairs in Ephrata, Gay Gordon Byrne with the Repair Association, and Olivia Webb with iFixit. Thank all four of you. It's been education. Thank you very much for being with
us
today.
Thanks, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about the governor's budget proposal and some other things. That's on tomorrow's Smart Talk.